All right, Peter, welcome to the first guest on my Substack podcast recording. For those that don't know Peter, you're now in Thunder Bay, and you just recently finished seventh overall at the Unbound XL, which is a 350-mile unsupported cycling race in Emporia, Kansas. So I guess my first question is why did you decide to sign up for that?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Kyle. I really appreciate it, man. And why did I sign up for Unbound XL in the first place? It's kind of funny. I mean, I heard about Unbound XL years ago. My friend who sort of got me into cycling, was really into like the ultra distance scene. So he followed, all the sort of ultra cycling races across North America. So he sort of told me about Unbound XL. So it's sort of been on my radar for the past like 2-3 years. But I sort of like wasn't really doing any, like last season, I didn't really do any ultra stuff. But I wanted to, go to Unbound because I'd, seen how like epic it looks. But I was worried that I wouldn't get into the 200 through the lottery. And I was like, there can't be that many people who sign up for the 350. So that's kind of why I signed up for the 350. I think if the 200 was easier to get into, I might have signed up for that one. But yeah, that's sort of how that went.
So you started in rowing, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So in rowing.
How'd you go from rowing to cycling?
Yeah, so the summer after my third year, I tree planted all through university, but that was the first year I didn't tree plant. So I was actually, able to do things during the summer. And I was rowing, I was on the, I went to school in Nova Scotia. So I was on the provincial team for rowing, because that was a Canada Games year, so I went to Canada Games. But I had, had some time, and I had a friend who bought a gravel bike. My roommate bought a gravel bike, and so that's sort of what prompted me to want to get a gravel bike. So bought one on Facebook Marketplace, and just sort of started riding. And kind of fell in love with it. And it was funny, like I didn't really get to actually ride it that much that summer, but that friend signed up for this bike packing race across Nova Scotia. And I don't know what behooved me to do this, but because he was doing it, I was like, all right, well, if he's doing it, I can do it too, even though I wasn't really biking that much. So yeah, that summer I did a 1400K bike packing race across Nova Scotia with like maybe 20 hours of cycling between like June and August, and like then just biked for 60 hours straight pretty much, and hated it, like absolutely hated it. Swore I would never do a ultra race again, and here I am.
And what year was that?
That was the summer of 2022.
Okay. So then 3 years later, you're doing, what was your finishing time? 20 odd hours? Or
yeah.
Wow. Straight ride.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, man.
So we'll just rewind a little bit. So I don't know the full story, but leading up to the race, you had some bike issues I've heard about.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so hectic leading up to the race because on my last big training ride leading up to Unbound, it was 2 weeks before, I was planning on doing 12-hour 300 and like 300 to 400K ride on gravel roads around Thunder Bay, and in the middle of the ride while I was going just like downhill on like a sort of a washboardy gravel road, my frame cracked. And I mean, there's a bit of backstory there because my frame had bent, and now I actually think there was a little hairline crack. I did Paris to Ancaster, mm-hmm. and I think so it bent during that when I hit this massive rock on like a little mud chute. So on that ride, 2 weeks before I'm out, my frame cracked. And I mean, luckily I was able to just, you know, get home on the highway. But one, I didn't get to do like my most important session before Unbound. And also like I was going to do some night riding, didn't get to very well any night riding. And I mean, more importantly, I then didn't have a bike. So I literally up until 6 days before the race, I didn't have a bike, and I ended up just borrowing a friend's bike and, you know, riding it like four or five times before. So yeah, it was cortisol levels were high in that week.
And no knee issues or anything during the race?
No, I mean, to be fair, I swapped over my cranks. They were both SRAM Force cranks. So swapped over my cranks, I ended up using the same saddle. So I think that's sort of what saved me. Like the positioning, the bike was like, had very different geometry, but same crank length, same saddle. So yeah, no issues at all. Actually, it ended up, I got really, really lucky there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So your prep in the week leading up was a little bit compromised then, you could say.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. The 2 weeks before, I mean, I really didn't, the rides I did were either on my mountain bike, which is good, but like not ideal prep because it's different. And on like an old road bike with down tube shifters from the 70s, which also was not ideal. Yeah. No, the 2 weeks before where the training wasn't ideal, but I mean, hey, it ended up working out. So
for sure. So you got there Wednesday. So take me through like the first like 48 hours you're in Kansas, because the race starts on Friday.
Yeah. So got there Wednesday night, stayed in Kansas City Wednesday night, and then drove down to Emporia on Thursday morning. And I mean, my first impression of Kansas wasn't like the best. I was, because the week leading up to the race, there was an insane amount of rain. So I was just looking at the forecast and looking at, you know, what people were posting on social media and absolutely freaking out. Like, it just looked apocalyptic. Like, as we were driving from Kansas City into like towards Emporia, like all the fields were just like absolutely flooded. And this is a day before the race. So it's like, we're fucked. Like, it's just going to be an absolute mud fest. And so that wasn't great. And actually when we got there, it was kind of drizzling too. So went to do, you know, got to Emporia around 11 and went to go do a just sort of shakeout ride. And, you know, I wanted to ride like the first little start of the course just to see what it was like. And man, I turned around after like 15 minutes because there was so much mud. I was like, and I didn't bring stuff to clean my bike. So I was like, I didn't anticipate having to. So I was like, you know, screw this. I'm not going any further. So I ended up just like riding on the road for most of it. So initial impression wasn't great, but then after that, it was weird. Like after my ride, got back to Emporia, had some food, and then the sun came out, and then it kind of started turning into this beautiful day. And then the expo started to open up, and man, the expo at Unbound, I would go back to Unbound just for the expo. Mm-hmm. It is crazy. Like, it is wild. I don't really know how to describe it just because there's so much going on. There's so many like crazy bikes around every, and like the energy there is so good. Like everyone's so stoked. Even the locals, like I had a bunch of locals come up and just like talk to me and were like super excited that, you know, I was there and that, you know, everyone was there. And yeah, no, the energy around the expo was fantastic. So I don't know, that first Thursday definitely started out rough, but you know, the expo saved it for sure.
So the vibes were getting a little better then.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, the cool thing with the expo is you can go and like see all the pros and all that. Like they're just hanging out. So all these people that you've seen on social media for months are just chilling. You can go see their bikes, and you know, some of my heroes. The first year I did it, I got to meet a couple of days before the race, which was pretty cool. So yeah, that expo is pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was super cool. There was like a riders meeting for everyone doing the Unbound XL, and I was just looking around. Like I did not pay attention to the presentation at all, because I was just looking around and like, oh my god, like there's Lachlan Morton, there's Lyle Wilcox, there's Jen Jackson, or sorry, Heather Jackson, and like exactly like you said, every like all these people that you know, I've been following for so long. And then yeah, like just getting to meet some of them and talk to them, and like they're also in just like stoked to be there. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. So the race started on Friday at 3 p.m. So take me through your morning and the lead up to the race.
So I was trying to adjust, like in the week leading up to the race, I started to try and adjust my sleep schedule a little bit. Because I normally like have a very hard time sleeping in. Like I like to get up early. But yeah, like you said, the race doesn't start till 3. So my thinking was like, also there's a time change, right? Like it's in central time. Mm-hmm. So my thinking was like, if I wake up at 5 a.m. on, you know, the morning of the race, that's like an extra like 5 hours that I don't need to be awake, right? Whereas, you know, I ended up sleeping in till like 9. So, you know, ended up, you know, getting an extra 4. Like I was awake for fewer hours before the race. I don't know if that actually makes a difference, but in my mind it did. So, yeah, got up race day morning around 9. And I still had to do a few things to my bike, like, you know, make sure my light and GPS, everything was charged. I charged them the night before, but just in case they like had lost some battery, made sure they were charged. Yeah, sort of like double checked all my kit and everything. And that sort of was most of what I did that morning. Had, I think for breakfast, I had oatmeal for breakfast. And then I was actually staying in Wichita, because I have a friend from university who's living in Wichita. So staying in Wichita, so then had to, you know, drive to Emporia, and, you know, it's like an hour drive, right? So left Emporia around 11, and in Emporia, there was a couple things I had to do. I was still worried about mud that morning. So I sprayed down my bike with like silicone spray. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it really helps to like make sure that mud doesn't stick to it. Mm-hmm. And my friend Nikki luckily had some silicone spray. So sprayed that, like just absolutely coated my bike race day morning. And after that had a lunch of a bagel and a banana and a cookie, and then tried to take a nap, but like was a little jittery. And I think just like lying down like in the dark was a good move. Laid down for like half an hour, and then it was game time.
Before we get into the start, was there anything specific you did to your bike, like tires or any specific prep?
It wasn't my bike, so there wasn't much I could do. I mean, other than, like I said, switching the cranks and seat. The other thing I switched was I put in tire inserts that Steve Anderson gave me, thank God, and put on fresh tires. And I think those two things were absolutely vital. Like that, because I didn't have a lot of people had suspension forks.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. So I wanted to be able to run like really low tire pressures.
Yeah.
And so I think the inserts were huge for that. It also wasn't my bike. So like I wanted to make sure I wasn't absolutely ruining the rims.
Yeah.
So I think the tire inserts were a smart move. And then the new tires, I was using 47 mil Pathfinders. And I mean, looking back, I probably could have run something wider, but I was a little bit worried about mud.
Mm-hmm.
I think like putting something wider probably would have been a bit better because we ended up not needing the mud clearance, but yeah.
And just on that, for people that don't know, the mud in Emporia or in Kansas is like thick peanut butter. Like it's the type of stuff that you get stuck in it, you go 10 feet and your wheels don't move. Like you can't physically move your bike. So that extra clearance, if you got into that, is critical because it can just stop you dead.
Yeah. It's sort of, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into that later, but that mud is like, I don't know how, God created it like that, but it is wild.
Well, it's a couple hundred years of just cow patties just getting stacked on top of each other.
So, yeah.
Yeah. There's a video of Chase Wark. He stuck he licked his finger after he'd been riding in it. And I'm just like, dude, that is not just dirt. I can just dream about it. So I don't know how to break your race down, but maybe do like maybe from the start to sundown, like if you could walk me through that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try and give you a play by play. I'm sure I'll miss some things, but I would say for me it was broken down into like three stages. Yeah, like the initial like start to aid one, and then aid one till like the final aid station, and then final aid station to the finish. The start was wild. Like, I mean, even before the start, like just like lining up in on the, you know, that main street in Emporia, there's like hundreds of people lining the barriers and going absolutely crazy. There was like a big like police escort guiding us out of town.
Mm-hmm.
It was insane. It was absolutely wild. I've never been to a start like that. It was crazy.
I'm sure you heard the drones and everything else.
Yeah. There was a helicopter.
Yeah.
There's a helicopter up above us. It was crazy. And just, you know, I was in like the second or third row. So, you know, like right in front of me was like all these, and just even riding to the start. I, you know, was riding to the start and, you know, came up next to this guy, and it ended up being, he said his name was Robin. And I was like chatting with this guy, Robin. Turns out Robin's an absolute baller and ended up coming like second or like third or something. But I didn't realize till after who I was talking to. It was cool to just be like lined up behind, you know, all the pros. And, you know, the start was obviously a spectacle, like I was saying, with the police escort. And I don't know why, but for some reason, from what I'd read online, I thought the start would be like relatively chill, at least for a little bit. And I was so wrong. It was like, I mean, obviously with the police escort, it was chill for a little bit, but then it just like, I felt like the first hour or two were raced like it was a 100 mile or 200 mile race. It was insane. Like my average heart rate for the first 2 hours was like 170, which I at a certain point I just stopped looking at it because I was just like, okay, this is insane.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest thing that stuck out to me, was just how fast the start was. And, you know, I kind of had this expectation going in that, you know, at the start, there'd be some camaraderie, people would want to chat and stuff, but there was none of that. Like, I didn't talk to anyone for the first, like, I mean, there'd be, you know, like a little comment here or there. If, you know, one guy had his drops cut off and I was like, dude, what happened to your drops? And just like little comments here and there, but there was no, it was a lot more, like kind of cagey a little bit than I expected it to be. And, you know, people, like, with people dive bombing corners, and it's like, man, like, we're going to be here for like 24 hours. Like, don't crash out in the first 2 hours. So the start was really fast, and, you know, the front group of maybe, call it 50 people, was together for the first hour, and then the top, you know, maybe 10 men, like, broke off the front in the first, you know, just after the first hour. Mm-hmm. And I was like, my goal going in was to be in like the second group, because I was like, there's no way I can hang with like the top, you know, mm-hmm. 10 or 20 guys. I just want to be in the second group. And so I was in that second group, but they were pushing like harder than I would have like expected to be pushing at the start of an event like that. Mm-hmm. And around hour two, we got to the first sort of, I'll call it technical section. It's not that it was that technical. It's just that the road, because of the mud, there was trucks going through the mud, you know, in the week leading up, that had, you know, left these big ruts, and those ruts had just baked in the sun for like 24 hours, and like they'd become really treacherous. So, you know, in this big group that we had, there's really only two lines, because of the, and they were only like a foot wide. And if one person went down in a rut, that meant that everyone else behind them was going down. So, you know, I was with a group of a couple dozen people, and, you know, pretty soon after we entered that section, they're like, people started going down. Mm-hmm. Like, at first I didn't notice it, but then, you know, I like sort of looked behind me at one point, and, you know, there wasn't anyone there. And I found out like later that there was like a crash. And then, not too long after that, someone went down in front of me, and there was like, when you're in a rut, there's nothing you can really do unless you bunny hop out. So I, like, someone down right in front of me, I like sort of tried to just instinctively turn to, you know, get away from it. But then my front tire caught the rut and I went down as well. Luckily, you know, had like a little, you know, still have a bit of like road rash, but nothing terrible. Was able to get back on my bike right away. But yeah, it was definitely a little treacherous through those ruts. And that sort of made the group split there. So I kind of had to chase back on a little bit, but eventually sort of found this group of like 8 to 10 people. We started pulling together, and that was good. But then we sort of started, we hit a couple mud sections, and I mean, like you were saying, had heard about this like legendary peanut butter run. And I told myself, you know, if I see mud, I'm not running through it. I'm gonna walk. Cause that's what, you know, sort of, that's what I read. That's what everyone had told me.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. Like, you know, I think I was on the front at that point, and I, you know, we got to this mud section. I hopped right off, sort of walked through it, and then everyone just rode through it. And I didn't realize that there's sort of different types of Kansas mud. Like if it's wet, you can actually ride through it. If it's, if there's sort of a puddle, you can ride through it. And if it's not very long, you're good. I didn't really realize that till after I hopped off at the first mud section or two. And then after having to catch back on, I was like, okay, you know what? This is dumb. Everyone else is riding through it. I just started riding through it.
Yeah.
It was fine. Yeah, so that takes us to like hour two or three. And then I, at that point, I was in a group with like Lael and, you know, like all like the top women and, you know, sort of this like second group of men. We were all like trading poles, working really well together, you know, started catching people. So the group started to grow. And we were, you know, we were moving quite fast. I was really happy with, you know, how the group was working. But then we ended up getting to like a sort of a series of punchy little climbs. And then the group kind of split a little bit. And the Heather Jackson and this guy Bob ended up going up the road. So I sort of followed instinctively, but again, like once I caught up to them, I was like, man, what am I doing? Like I just went, like, it, you know, I kind of had to put in a bit of an effort to catch on to them. And I was like, I'm, you know, we're 3 hours into this race and like, I'm already having to like put in efforts just to like stay with people. And, you know, just started second guessing myself and like thinking I'd gone out way too hard. But, you know, what just sort of rolled with them, tried not to think about that. And I was with them for a while, like the three of us sort of started working well together. And yeah, rode with them from, you know, say hour three all the way until that first aid station. Within there, like a lot happened. We went through by far the most technical part of the race. Like there was some proper mountain biking in there. And but I mean, it was during the day. Like if we'd gone through that during the night, it would have been absurd. But yeah, what went through some like pretty serious technical double track and caught a few people. They ended up sort of, one ended up dropping back, the other rode through the first gas station instead of stopping with us. But yeah, that was sort of that first section of the race. I don't know if you had like anything to add there.
So these aid stations, they're just those water stations, eh? Like there's nothing, is there anything there or for you to grab?
So yeah, I guess when I say aid station, I mean gas station.
Oh, okay.
Like it was just, there was one, you know, I think it was kilometer 108, but I just rode through it because, you know, I told myself if I didn't get there in under 4 hours that I'd stopped. But I think I got there in under 3 hours and I was like, okay, Jesus, yeah, I'm not stopping. And then the next one was at kilometer 175. And I think we got there in like under 6 hours. Like we got there before 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of flabbergasted because at that point I hadn't even touched, like I had on me, I had a hydration vest and then two bottles. I didn't even touch my bottles.
Oh, really? So
I carried like an extra, you know, liter and a half of water. And I was kind of debating it. Like if the people I was with had ridden through that first gas station, because then there was another water stop, gas station, I think like 80K from there. I think I could have ridden through that. Mm-hmm. One, but they ended up stopping and I was kind of thankful because I did want, like, that was my plan. Like I had not thought about not, like that was, you know, if everything's going perfectly, I'll go all the way to that gas station. Mm-hmm. So it hadn't even crossed my mind the thought of going further. So I was happy to stop there.
Is it fairly mutual when you guys are there? Like we're all gonna pay and then fill up our bottles and stuff, or is it just like, because I've heard both sides that it's either Like, everybody's very polite and takes their time and waits for the group to get everything they need. And I've also heard it's like people literally throwing cash at the register and just running out with their arms full of stuff, throwing it into their skin suits and then taking off.
I'd say it was a mix of both. There was a group of guys who were there who were leaving just as we were getting there. And yeah, they definitely seemed like they were in like way more of a rush. I would say like Heather was insanely efficient. Like, she hopped off. I think, like, I didn't even see her in the store because she was in and out pretty well before I had even gotten in.
Probably scouted.
Yeah, like, I don't know how she did it. So I think she probably did do that. At every single gas station, I was the last person in line, so I had to wait for everyone else. And so I was the last person out, too. It's not that it was, like, I think it was a little cagey, a little bit. Like, they were, like, running in, and I knew it would be fast. Like, so I brought cash to be able to pay with, but it was a lot faster than I expected. Like, I only got water at the gas stations. Like, a lot, like, other people were getting food and stuff too, and they were still faster than me. I think part of it was that I had my money in my top tube bag, and I think having it on me would have been better because then I could have taken it out while I was in the shop. But yeah, it was pretty wild. How I was just blown away by how dialed they had it. Like, they knew exactly where to go. Were in and out like that. It was insane. You're right. They probably did scout it, now that I think about it.
So that's right around dusk, that first aid station you stopped at?
Yeah. Yeah, first aid station was right around dusk. I had, like, I'd put my light on, my helmet, while we were riding riding to that gas station, so I didn't have to do that while we got there. But yeah, then just like turned my light on as we were leaving. Luckily, this guy, Bob, another guy I was riding with, we ended up rolling out at the same time, but it was only because the hood on his handlebars had come loose. So he had to like tighten it. So, I mean, he had time to like get out his multi-tool and tighten his hood before I was, in the time that it took me to just do the basics. I did wax my chain at every gas station, and I'm not sure other people did. That may have been what added time, but I think that did help me.
Yeah.
So then dusk, rode out with him. I was super happy because I was gonna, like, I haven't done a ton of night riding. So I was like a little scared about, okay, like, what's this gonna look like? So it was nice to be riding, you know, through the start of the night with someone. It was also gorgeous. Like, the sunset was, it was amazing. The sunset and sunrise were like probably my favorite parts of the race, just because, I mean, like, you can just see forever. Like, the sky is so big there because you're on top of these hills. It's just grass and cattle fields forever. So the sunset was really nice. Nice to have some company there too. And that's when, you know, we sort of started chatting a bit more. Like I said, during the beginning, like, there wasn't much like chatting, but then as night fell, sort of got to know this guy, Bob, a little more. He'd done, this was his fourth XL, Unbound XL. And I think he came either fourth or fifth last year, the year before. Like, so he's, you know, he knows what he's doing. So that definitely gave me a lot of comfort, knowing that, like, this guy knows what he's doing and, you know, we're riding together. And Heather had left, a couple minutes before us, but was like, you know, I'd said, like, you guys will probably catch me. I'll see you up the road. But, you know, I was just, Bob and I were just riding together for an hour, and we were riding, like, I would say pretty hard, not like really trying to push the pace, but like every time I was on the front, I didn't really dip below like 250 watts. Like I felt like, okay, we're going fast.
Yeah.
And it took us an hour to catch Heather.
Oh.
And she was just riding by herself.
Yeah.
Like I was kind of, to be fair, we got stuck behind, it was pretty sketchy. This truck, there was a truck that was towing another truck that we got stuck behind. And it was super weird because like we like would pass it on the uphills or sorry, on the downhills.
Yeah.
Like we're faster on the downhills, but it would pass us on the uphills. But when it was going downhills at a certain point, we couldn't pass because like the truck behind started to kind of like sway back and forth. Yeah, yeah. And it that sucked because then we were just like inhaling diesel fumes.
Yeah.
For an hour. I got a splitting headache and I didn't realize it was from the truck until it peeled off. I just thought, God, I must be dehydrated or something, but I think it was just from inhaling the fumes. But yeah, anyways, caught Heather about now, like, you know, around 10:30 maybe. And yeah, then the three of us just kind of rolled together for a while. And I still don't know what happened, but just at one point I looked back and Bob wasn't there. So I don't know if he got a flat or something or a mechanical. But yeah, so then after Bob, you know, after we dropped Bob around 11:30, it was just, I just rode with Heather pretty well until the next aid station. And that was cool too, like, because again, like, you know, when you're only riding with like one other person and you're riding through the night, you just end up chatting. So got to know her a little bit and it was nice, like, cause she had ridden the 200 a couple times. And at that point, like around, you know, midnight, we started to ride through sections of the 200 course. So we came up to the infamous Little Egypt.
Yeah, I was gonna ask if you rode through that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she was like, yeah, so we're gonna head through Little Egypt. And it was funny, like the way she described it, she was like, I don't know why everyone goes on and on about this section because it's really not that crazy. Like I was worried, you know, because because there was some stuff that we'd been through that I was like, you know, that was quite chunky, like some real chunky like ATV trails. I was like, man, Little Egypt is worse than this. Like, I don't know. Like, this is crazy. But Little Egypt, it's just another gravel road. I don't know why it's so infamous. I mean, there's like a steep climb.
I think that's what it is. Like, if I remember correctly, it's like you go through a ravine and then it's like a steep climb out of it.
Yes.
So, but then the ravine was kind of like rocky and stuff.
For sure.
But yeah, I know, because I never got to pre-ride it last year, and so I come up and I see the sign Little Egypt. Yes. I'm like, oh, yes. Okay, here we go. it was absolutely nothing.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny too. They have a sign. There's certain sections that are famous that they have like signs for. There's no signs across the whole course other than those like famous sections.
Yeah.
And they had a sign for Little Egypt, and it was so underwhelming. So underwhelming. But just nice to, like I said, have someone who knew the course. Mm-hmm. I think she, not only had she ridden it a couple times, she also pre-rode sections. So, you know, before or after Little Egypt, I forget, she was like, I pre-rode this yesterday. This is like the one mud section that I've been thinking about. Mm-hmm. And just as we were coming up to that, a couple minutes later, we found this guy who'd crashed in that section because the ruts were so bad. Like I said before, like trucks going through from people pre-riding. And I mean, the ruts were hard to see in the dark, but anyway, it was scary seeing this guy. Like it was, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. and he was dazed. Like we stopped and we're chatting to him. Like he wasn't really making sense, but I mean, he had the wits about him to like call for help. There's people coming. But yeah, he said he broke his collarbone, was definitely concussed.
Yeah.
So after that, like for a couple kilometers, there was like a really rutted road. And like I rode really carefully, like just sort of like 1 foot out half the time to like be able to step down if I caught the rut at all. Well, after that, honestly, just rode with Heather for a while. I started to feel pretty, like, a little tired around like 2 a.m.
Like
And
sleep deprived or just fatigued?
I, good question. I'm not sure. I think it was probably a mix of both. I felt, so I had a caffeine gel every 3 hours, and I definitely felt that like nearing the end of that 3 hours before I had more caffeine, that's when I would start to feel the fatigue, and that's when I'd be like, okay, I need more caffeine. So it might have been like near the tail end of like a caffeine uptake. Yeah, started to feel pretty not great around 2 a.m. But then we caught these two guys who were really hurting. Like they were starting to crack a little bit. And that sort of remotivated me because we saw them up the road and I was like, oh my God, no way, we're gonna have a group of four. This is awesome. So like pushed, pretty hard to catch them. But then yeah, when we caught them, realized they were absolutely cracked and like useless. And so at that point, like Heather kind of just leapfrogged them. And I went with her, but kind of was hurting a little bit after like catching back onto her wheel. But that was through a rutted section. So, kind of like looked down after the effort at my computer, was like, a little tired and just like lost. I think I just lost focus for a second. Hit the side of a rut and like went down, and on the same side, on my right side, luckily again wasn't hurt. More importantly though, bent my derailleur hanger,
Oh,
and
really?
that was an issue. That was seriously inconvenient because it meant that I could only be in my smallest four cogs without skipping. So like, and that was through like a pretty like punchy section. So I was like grinding at like 30 RPM up the hill.
Man.
It was so brutal. But luckily that was like the last hour before the aid station.
Okay.
We kind of had to just suffer up some hills, and then it was sort of downhill into that aid station. Got there just before 3 a.m. Dropped one of the guys in the group in that group of two. And then rolled into that gas station with Heather and that other guy. And while I was there, was able to bend my derailleur hanger back by hand and got it to the point where it would skip every once in a while, but I could get through all my gears and not really have to worry about it. So that was good. But again, like I was so slow at the gas station. Like just got absolutely. Heather must have left 5 minutes before me. It was wild.
Really?
5 minutes might be an exaggeration. I don't know though, because I mean, part of it was that I had to bend my derailleur hanger back. But yeah, and at that one, I didn't just buy water. I also got gummy bears and a Coke, and. Yeah, the other piece for me taking longer was that I had like Morton with me, like hydration mix, carb mix, and it just does not mix well with cold water.
No, it's like overnight you have to leave that stuff.
Yes, and oh my God, that was a big fumble on my part because it just started to clump, and then I was screwed. Like I couldn't.
Was this in your pack or was it in your bottle? Oh,
In
so
my
it kind of
pack.
goes through the tube.
No, and so, but it was weird though. Like I could still get water through the tube, but the Morton was just like coated to the side of the bag. So I was just like getting straight water, which is kind of useless, especially during the night. Like it's not like I'm really dehydrated during the night. So then I kind of had to start eating more gels. And so then around Heather left a couple minutes before me. She was like, I'm gonna just like pedal easy until you catch me. Because by that point we'd like sort of had had a good thing going where we'd been riding for a bunch of hours during the night together. So set out from that gas station and, you know, very motivated to catch her. And I was feeling really good at that point.
So what time was this? Was it still in the dark?
Yeah. So that was like 3 a.m.
Okay.
3 a.m. feeling really, really good at that point. Stoked that my derailleur hanger's no longer bent.
12 hours.
What's that?
12 hours in.
So 12 hours in. 12 hours in and feeling really, really good. Went through a low point around like 1 and 2 a.m. 3 a.m. I feel like $1 million.
Nice.
And so started, you know, getting after it, trying to catch Heather. And then, you know, again, it took me about an hour to catch her. So around 4 a.m. I could see her light in front of me. And then it literally happened in the span of like a couple minutes where, okay, I'm feeling great. I can see her. And then boom, like right as I was about to catch her, my stomach just went.
Oh, really?
And I don't know if it was that I had to eat more gels than I anticipated because I wasn't able to get any more. I don't know if it was the gummy bears. I don't know if I can ever eat gummy bears again. or if it was the Coke or what, but or the combination, I don't know. My stomach just started to go so bad. I felt so nauseous and then I wasn't able to eat anything for a little bit. So then I just like my power slowly started to fall off a cliff. And even though I could see her, like she was only like a couple hundred meters in front of me, I couldn't catch her. It was so brutal. It was torture. Because I knew, like, if we caught each other, we'd be so much faster. Or if I caught her, we'd be so much faster. And then, like, slowly as my stomach got worse and worse, started to drift off until I couldn't see her. And then the nausea just got worse and worse. And, you know, it's funny. I had never really – I have a stomach of steel. Like, I can eat anything on a ride and be fine. Like, I could just eat, like – 100 grams of carbs of cookies and I'd be chilling. But so I'd never really understood when people said they get GI issues riding until that point. Like I felt so terrible, but I just like after about 15, 20 minutes, half hour of not eating anything, I was like, okay, I don't think this is going away. I just need to start eating again. And so just started forcing food down, gels down, and getting what I could out of my bladder and my bottles. And it was just like, it was a good hour from like, you know, that point till say like 5:30 where I really just, my stomach was in a really bad place. Had some pretty gnarly diarrhea at one point.
Oh yeah, just stop.
Yeah, I had to stop. But luckily, got to slowly just kept eating, kept moving, and slowly started to feel better. And at that point got to the worst mud section of the course where we actually had like a decent section of peanut butter mud. Mm-hmm. And caught Heather there because she had a fall and her derailleur was like pretty clogged with mud because she tried to ride through it. And yeah, so caught up with her there. Actually had to break out the paint stick to get the mud out of the tire. Yeah. So really glad I brought that.
Yeah.
But yeah, then at that point was feeling better and had caught Heather. So morale sort of went up from there. We rode together. Yeah. Rode together with Heather after I caught her. But I kept having stomach issues, and so kept having to like, there was like two or three more times when I was with Heather and had to pull off and just diarrhea on the side of the road. It was pretty gross. But at that point she like would wait for me, which was really nice. Cause after the mud, she was having trouble like with her clips, and I had like helped her. I'd brought a chopstick. So like helped get the mud out of her cleat. So it was like a good like mutual helping of each other at that point. Rode with her until and just sort of slowly started to feel better. And it really helped being with someone, because just like just focusing on holding a wheel was just something else to like just gave me something to focus on and forced me to really push. Like it was at certain points, especially uphill, she's like really good at climbing. You know, it was all I could do. It was all my mind could think about was just like holding on to her wheel. And then when she'd flick me through, I was just like, okay, just push. I just thought about pushing as hard as I could so that she didn't like, feel like she needed to drop me. Cause I was like, this is my saving grace right now.
Yeah.
And I just like rode like that for a couple hours and slowly started to see the first hints of sunlight, and then felt so reinvigorated. Oh my God. Like, oh, it was amazing. And then, you know, once started to see the sunlight, then realized, okay, like we're less than an hour from the last feed station. Mm-hmm. So then again, another morale boost, and just sort of started stacking those wins, and going into that last hour into the final aid station felt really, really good. Like morale was really high. Rode in there with Heather, stocked up on food. And that was my first time actually eating like real food throughout the race. So I actually had like a couple bags of chips and some pickles, mm-hmm. and, you know, just something that wasn't sweet. That really saved me. Yeah. But then stocked up on gels and stuff too, and rode out with Heather. And then from there, like that was say around 7 a.m. Like we only had like another 130k, which sounds like a lot, but when you've done
that much, yeah,
when you've done that, like it really felt like the home stretch.
Yeah.
Had a low point after that, you know, about an hour after the aid station, because again, stomach still wasn't 100%, so wasn't able to eat as much as I was used to eating. So again, went through a period where all I could do was like hold on to Heather's wheel and just pull as hard as I could when I was in front. And just spent a good hour of just like, felt like I was barely hanging on. And then there was only like 75K left, you know, like just barely held on for a while. Then sort of looked down at my Garmin, realized we only had 75K, and just like ate everything I could. It started to hit, you know, half an hour later, and I was like, you know, I turned to Heather and I was like, if we go fast right now, like we can get in under 21 hours. Like that was really motivating to me. But she's like, oh, I don't know. I'm really not feeling good. And, you know, ended up catching this other guy who same thing, was absolutely cracking. Mm-hmm. And initially I thought, okay, well, like I'll stay with them and they'll probably start to feel better. But I was on the front and like sort of pushed it a little harder up this hill. And I looked back and they were both gone. Like they were like, there was a little bit of gap, and I was like, all right, screw it. Like I'm going. And from that point, just, you know, there was like 60K left, ate the remainder of my food, drank the remainder of my water. And I was like, I'm just going to go. Felt like, you know, that food really sustained me for a good hour, really started to feel the heat and lack of carbs in the last hour. But I mean, at that point, there was only like 30K left. So I was just, and then I was catching 50 milers.
Oh,
so, so motivating. Like saw the first one on the hill. I was like, oh my God, is that an XL guy? So just hammered.
Yeah.
And then realized it was a 50 miler. But then, you know, it was motivating to see people ahead and just like, just chase them even if they were 50 milers, and that really, really motivated me. And then I was really starting to crack in the last like half hour, but this guy who was just riding the course gave me some of his water. Like he wasn't even racing. I mean, he was a guardian angel. Like he just saw me and was like, hey man, I'm just riding the course, like, do you need anything? I was like, I really need water. He gave me some water. He's like, you need anything else? I was like, man, I've been out of food for a while. Like, do you have any food? He gave me a gel, and that's like what got me to the finish line. I need to find that guy and thank him. Just kept chasing 50 milers and passing them, and then yeah, the last like 5K were super emotional because I really didn't expect, like my goal was to finish. Mm-hmm. And I had this like rough, like, you know, stretch goal of finishing in under 24 hours. And I was like, within 5K, I was like, oh my God, like I'm about to finish in under 21 hours. Like, this is insane. And I thought like, okay, like I might even be in the top 10. Like, this is actually wild.
I was going to ask, did you have any idea what place you're in?
Yeah. So around like in the beginning, like around, like, you know, when we were less than 100 miles in, these guys on the side of the road who were just watching, like handing out water and stuff, were like, you're doing great. There's only like 12 guys ahead of you. And I was like, oh my God, like, you know, maybe 12, 15 guys ahead of you. Like, cause I don't know what exactly they said, but I knew I was in the top 20 and I was like, dude, this is crazy. Like I'd be so happy if I could like stay in the top 20 and then, you know, maybe get in the top 15. And then, so I kind of had a rough idea from how many they said were in front of me and how many I had passed that I was like, I knew I was in the top 10. But I did not know that. Yeah. I ended up coming seventh. It was wild. Yeah. So crossing the finish line was really, really emotional.
Yo, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were all in a group chat here texting, and a couple times in the night I'd look and be like, oh man, because we are all thinking the same thing. Like when we saw your average speed around like 8 PM, 9 PM before we all went to bed, we're like, man, he's going hard. Like, I totally expected to see when I woke up at like 2 to check, and when I woke up again at like 4 or whatever, you'd basically be in the same spot. I figured you'd just be on the side of the road just hating life. So yeah, when we started texting again like 8, I think I was on the trainer that morning. And so I'll just keep hit refresh. It's like, man, he's holding on. And then you'd see the progress. And then I saw when you dropped Heather there, and yeah. So impressive. We were all so stoked.
Yeah. That's really cool that you guys are watching. Yeah, yeah. Man, I had the exact same thoughts going through my head. I, at every point throughout the race, I was like, I've gone too hard. Like first 2 hours, I was like, I'm screwed. When we hit that first gas station, I was like, I'm even more screwed. Like I've gone way too hard. And I just kept waiting for the point that I was gonna blow up. Cause I was like, it's coming. Like, I know there's no way this is sustainable.
Yeah.
And yeah, it never came.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, some could argue when you're on the side of the road with your pitch.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. Yeah. Two final questions. What was what was the first thing you had to eat when you were done? Was there anything specific? And what's next for you?
Yeah, so it's funny. I actually read the day before I think you posted a Substack about Unbound, and you talked about eating a salty burrito. So when I finished, I hadn't had salt. Like, the only thing of salt I'd had was like chips and a couple pickles. So I was craving salt so bad. And I was like, man, I need a burrito. Like, I've never needed a burrito like I did after that race. And so the first thing I had was a burrito. And I don't think any burrito I have for the rest of my life will ever live up to that. It was insane. It was amazing. Yeah. Burrito, and then I had Jimmy John's like right after the burrito. It's not enough food.
Yeah. Did you go home the next day, I guess, on Sunday?
Yeah, okay. I went home on Sunday.
How were the legs for that?
For the drive home?
Yeah.
Oh man, so bad. I had such a hard time walking for like 2 days. It's funny though, like I didn't have no saddle sores. And I'm someone who normally really struggles with saddle sores, did not have a single saddle sore. Oh. It was just the muscle damage of riding. Yeah, it was bad. I couldn't do stairs for a good 2 days.
So what's next for you?
Yeah, so It's a good question. I've gotten that question a couple of times. I still don't really know. Like, I want to do, I'm gonna do the Lutz at 99er, because it's, you know, pretty close by. But Unbound was like my main focus for this season, and yeah, I don't really have a plan now, because I feel like that kind of changed things doing so well. So now I kind of, I know I have my eyes on doing maybe doing Little Sugar in the fall, and definitely doing the XCM Championships. But yeah, definitely thinking about doing Unbound, doing it next year now.
The XL again, or are you going to do the 200?
I think I would do, the XL was such a unique experience that I want to do it again now. Like, it was really, I loved it. Like, I absolutely loved it. It was the course was amazing. The camaraderie, you know, with the other riders was amazing. I'd be tempted to do the XL again next year.
I think that the XL is going to start becoming more of like a marquee event. Like every year it gets bigger and bigger, but because the 200 is so difficult to win now or get a result even, I think like I have a feeling like Chase Wark, that type of like a guy on a good day will still only finish like 20th in the 200, I think will now move to the 350 because
100%.
I think it's just too difficult. Like, look at Rob Britton. He probably wouldn't have won the 200. But now he like winning the XL, like he's all over social. So
Yeah, you get so much more recognition for winning the XL than you do finishing top 30 at Unbound.
this pack fill, yeah. So I think you're gonna see a lot of people next year move over. So it'll be really interesting. So now that you got a year of experience, the only thing is now you're on the south route, so it's a little bit hillier. I like it a lot better. It's a little more, it's not technical, but it's more engaging. Like you go over these nice, beautiful grassy hills, and there's a lot more two track as opposed to like wide open gravel roads. So yeah. It, apparently the north course is supposed to be more technical, but I think the south course is just as technical, but it's definitely more engaging. So
Interesting. Okay.
yeah. So that's it'll
Something
be
to look forward to then.
yeah, it'll be different, but yeah, it'll be you won't be riding the same roads as you did this year, which is also kind of nice. It's nice to see both sides because they're quite
Exactly.
different. For Kansas, they're quite different. So yeah, you can only get so different when you're out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's funny. Part of the XL course went like a little bit south, and I think that was my favorite part of the course, because yeah, like you said, it was a lot, it was just very different than the, I did find that there's a lot of just like straight roads in the north where you're just heading straight for a long time, whereas found where we headed south was a lot more twisty turny.
And the run in on the south is a lot nicer too. Like I find the north course, the last 30K or so are just like flat, wide open. I didn't really enjoy it as much as I did the north course. There's a lot more like zigzags and hills, and you usually have a tailwind too, apparently, because of the wind from the south. So that'd be nice.
That helps.
So oh, big time. Especially after, well, I've only ever done the 200. That's 330K, and I know that tailwind. You can feel every K an hour that it's pushing you. So I only imagine after 550.
To be honest, I couldn't really, I don't know how there I was mentally, so I couldn't really feel the wind, but I'm sure a tailwind would be nice.
When you got over that last climb into town, what was that feeling? That last punch after you come out of the tunnel there?
I'd sort of had like tears in my eyes a little bit, like on and off over like the last 5, 10K, but then like from there I was just, because there I started to recognize it, and I was like, oh my gosh, it just like
It happened,
it all hit.
Oh yeah, it was last year. I came in with a bit of fog on my glasses because yeah, it was It's something that you think about for so long and you've seen so many times, and to actually do it, it's a really cool experience.
Yeah. Super unique.
Yeah. Well, I've taken way too much of your time, but that was a really good story. And I got a million more questions. I might have to have you on here again for part two. So thanks so much for this.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for having me. It was, I haven't really like broken it down long form yet. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that.
Right on. Well, have a good one. And if I don't see you, have a good summer.
Yeah, man. You too. Take care.
Yeah, you too.